We used to have plague facts, but then we stopped doing that.
Oh, we're done with plague facts?
Well, I don't have any plague facts. And also, I think it kind of killed the conversation a little bit sometimes, unless you have a plague fact, Chris.
I can come up with something if you want me to.
Do you want to do a plague fact or no?
I'm not dying to do one. I mean, I can go either way.
Hey, what the hell is happening? Dude, what? Did that sound really slow to you?
Nope.
No.
Sorry. We are broadcasting live in the ever-present now of this moment, eternally stuck in a slice of time, now locked into ones and zeros of an internet podcast. But we still are physically in a place called the Art Shed. I'm Mad Carl.
I'm Normal Andy.
I'm Producer Chris.
Oh yeah, crack a beer. Mike, you can crack a beer too.
Yeah.
So we're here with Mike Malone, and the last I talked to him was around 1987 when he was doing a magazine. He was the editor of a magazine called the Magnamarf, in which was really cool. It was like our college. I guess you can tell us about it, Mike. But he's done a lot of other stuff. He's an animator. Game designer, a musician. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's right, man. Thanks, Carl. I appreciate it, man. And, you know, Andy and Chris, man, it's great to be here and great to be in the shed and great to meet you guys.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, Mike.
What do you think of the shed, Mike?
I freaking love it, man. Like, you know, I watch those like a lot of the home makeover shows, like Good Bones or like, you know, that kind of stuff. And like, Carl, like the before and after is intense here, man. I love the purples.
Oh, thanks, brother.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
He went with an open floor plan, too.
Yeah.
That is very 2000s, man.
Yeah.
So, I got to tell you guys, man, about like, I don't know if you remember, Carl, man, but when we started out with the Magnamarf Lampoon, Iggy was the guy that was the editor of the Lampoon, right? So Iggy was, I don't know where Iggy is today, and he seemed to be a little insane, but we were eating lunch one time, and he like was reading the college newspaper, and he brought the newspaper down, and they looked at me, and he's like, hey, Mike, you want to take over a club? And I'm like, yeah, sure. He's like, there's a bunch of clubs that are about to die. And he's like, if we rewrite the charter, the Lampoon will be able to take it over. So I'm like, that sounds awesome, man. So Iggy went on, and he one of his first raffles that he had, and Carl, I don't know if you remember this one, but he had the Jell-O baby.
I think I remember something like that.
Yeah, he took
very vague.
What was it?
Very vague memory.
Yeah.
He took haze of bong hits.
He took a baby doll that was like a life-size baby doll, and he put it in a 5-gallon jar of pickles, right, that had been emptied out, and filled it with Jell-O. And we sold raffle tickets for it for $5 each.
I don't know if I'd even want to win that one.
I know, right?
And, yeah, I mean, it probably still smelled like pickles too. I mean,
yeah, Jell-O pickles. I guess it's pretty cool in your dorm room, like, and you could put like a light through it.
Yeah, you get to shine a light through that.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, you guys are picking up what I'm putting down, man. Because if you look at the thing, it's pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
There was someone that we knew won this thing, and he won it at the pub. And so him and a bunch of his drunk buddies had won the Jell-O baby, and they had a parade across campus.
Oh, my God.
Yelling, I have won the Jell-O baby. And so he says to me, I see him like a couple months later, and he says, I have the Jell-O baby in my room. And like you guys were saying with like the backlighting or whatever, he's like, I think it's haunting my dreams. I think it's haunting my dreams. And I think it's possessed. and he threw the Jell-O baby out of the sixth floor window.
Oh, that was intense. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, something like that is made. It's built to be thrown from a height.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We chucked a sink out the window. And we shut off the light and we waited until somebody had a police monitor, and we waited until the campus police drove up and saw the freaking smashed sink, and we listened to them. Hey, I think there's a broken sink in the middle of this road or whatever.
Where did the sink come from?
Somebody ripped it out of the wall.
So they could trace it back to someone.
Yeah, but they didn't. I guess. I mean, I guess we found that in the fees of like $500 million fees. Yeah,
see, it was a traceable sink.
Yeah, kids can't do stuff like that nowadays because someone's going to post it on Instagram or Facebook.
Right,
right. It would all be on film.
Yeah, because kids are dumbasses.
Yeah,
although the Jell-O baby getting tossed out a 5-story window would be really intense to have on film.
Yeah, that would be good. And really, what's the harm in that?
Yeah,
maybe some glow sticks in there and throw it, you know.
I do have to agree with you guys that, like, you know, like social media, Instagram, like everyone, you know, having cameras on their phone, it's a real buzzkill for vandalism, man.
Yeah,
it is. And I'm always shocked when people blame Instagram and Facebook for causing kids to do stuff like this, because we did worse stuff than people say. Yeah, no, complain.
Right.
And there was no Instagram.
Right. We just didn't have it on record.
Right. We didn't even take photos. Right. I mean, we all had like film cameras and ways we could have recorded it, but it never occurred to us to do that.
Two in the moment.
Yeah.
If anything, it would probably make you think twice about doing something stupid when we wouldn't even think once about doing something stupid.
No. And you do it to be in the moment, to appreciate the moment.
Well, Mike, I don't. You probably could give more details on this, but in Towers, there was a guy who was doing like a Russian dance on a table in the sixth floor, like after doing like a ton of shots.
Well, you got to explain what Towers is to anyone who didn't go to
Framingham the Towers. State. It's a it's like a 8-floor building
dorm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the guy fell like. Crashed out, went through the screen, fell and landed in a bush, and I think he was okay. Like it was like a miracle. He should have been dead. Do you remember that one, Mike?
Or no? Oh, so that might have been my Russian neighbor.
Yeah.
So first of all, just a little disclaimer here, guys, is that anything that I say has about a 50% chance of being accurate.
Oh, that's more than me.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. But like if you look at Towers from the air, it's actually shaped like a swastika, and then the guy that designed that, this is what Iggy told me, the guy that designed that and then designed the library, I don't know if anyone's ever been to the Framingham State, or Carl, you remember, like Framingham State, like that library was weird. He designed both of those and then he committed suicide is the story that Iggy gave me. I don't know if it's true.
I heard that about SMU down the Cape or wherever, because somebody told me that like the dorms were designed really weird with like satanic things.
Yeah,
it might have been the same designer.
Yeah, what was weird is that I think in the 70s, like if you look at Boston City Hall, man, like the architecture like was really like authoritarian almost, you know, like it was. And there's some theories that like architecture at that point in America in the 60s and early 70s was like meant to like feel like institutional, you know?
Totally.
Know.
Yeah. People like, yes, but just Google Boston City Hall. It's like hideous. Go on about the Russian. Sorry, Andy.
Corrine Hill Towers do look like a swastika.
I was going to say, yeah, it's like a backwards swastika. It's not like the S shape, but it's totally.
Oh, are you guys, can you see the satellite or whatever?
Yeah.
I'm looking on Google Maps right now.
Oh, you're looking at it? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Iggy.
So there you go. So confirmed.
Yes.
I mean, who knows if it was completely purposeful.
I mean, if you're an architect, don't you see the plans? Can't you see that it looks
like I'm sure. Yeah.
It's the 60s too. Yeah, it's got to be true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I can see the drainage ditch that Carl lived in for a while.
we'll tell that story a little bit later. But
he didn't live there, but he just fell in there a couple times.
Yeah, I did live in there because I got kicked out of the dorms, and I just pitched a tent in the drainage ditch. And, I was there with like a 20 pack of beers and some weed and a girl, you know what I mean? The campus police eventually found me and were freaked out. Yeah,
how many days did it take them to find you?
Might have been the second day.
Okay. Yeah, so you weren't there very long.
Yeah, but I had to like move from place to place. What happened was these freshmen had a keg party, and the police came to break it up, and they all were running past my tent, and we were just sitting there drinking beer and smoking, and I'm waiting. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get it. I'm going to talk to the, campus police, but because by then I was a sophomore, and I'm like, I'm not afraid of the police. I'll just talk to them, and so I'm like, hey, I'm camping here. And the guy's like, you can't camp here in a drainage ditch. He's freaked out. And he actually tried to get me back in the dorms, but they didn't let me. So I think I slept in a car that night, and then after that, I was like a folk hero on campus, and everybody let me sleep in their apartments.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Carl, I knew it, man. It was the smoke from the bong, man.
Yeah.
So, if you watch the movie Rambo, man, he's on the run from the law, man, and he goes out into the woods. He doesn't fire up the bong, man.
Yeah. All right, tell us about the Russian guy, because I know.
So the Russian guy, he was very passionate about music. Right, but I came into the bathroom one day, man, and this crazy bastard is like, he's shaving his entire head. And when I say that, like, I don't mean his whole head. I mean, like, he's got shaving cream on his face and then on his neck, and it goes all the way around his neck to the back of his neck. And he's like shaving his whole neck and head. And I'm like, bro, what's going on, man? And he actually, what happened was is that he got thrown out of the concert because he hadn't signed up in time, or he signed up in the wrong language using the applications to be a musician. And they were like, you can't play. And he took that as a, he couldn't handle that, man. So like I was, me and my roommate are in our room, and he's next door, and he's just playing like Beatles and Elvis songs for 3 hours at the top of his lungs. But Carl, I think that could have been the night that you found him on the, like, doing the table dances, man.
I didn't find him there. It was famous. It was a famous story about the guy who fell out of the window off a table and landed like six stories down into a bush and like survived.
There was one guy that came to me. I was sitting in the cafeteria one day, and he comes over to me, man. And he's like, I'm like, what's going on, man? He's like, ah, freaking buzzkill, man. He's like, woke up this morning to turn on my TV, and then I remembered I threw it out the window last night. I was like, nice.
Do you think that's why they put bushes around dorms all the time?
Can't probably.
Right. Throw out the windows.
Yeah.
It's going to seal all the windows.
It might be a Nazi design element. Oh, they did seal the windows in our dorms, but we still hauled beers and broke out the screens.
Let's face it, Carl, it was for your own good.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So I didn't know you when you were in college, but as far as I can recall, looking at you, sent us a bunch of websites and stuff. You've had a pretty crazy career that's kind of all over the place. Do you want to talk us through some of the cooler things you've gotten to work on?
Yeah, man, I can walk you through some of that. This may sound a little self-indulgent, but I've always like, so Da Vinci's always been my hero, the guy was so far ahead of his time, Renaissance man, and just like, he was a dreamer, man. And like, some of the shit that like he drew and came up with was like off the charts. And
sure.
It, you know, I, I actually have a dream that like Ron Howard's going to make a movie with Tom Hanks as Da Vinci someday. I think that would be very cool. But when I was younger, I was like, I didn't really know what like a Renaissance man was or like who are Renaissance men. And like, I've always considered myself like a poor man Da Vinci. Like, certainly I'm no Da Vinci, but like what I like to do is I consider myself to be like a creator and not a consumer. Like, I like to
write
and I like to think and I like to like try to think of things that are different, you know, like, you know, how can we design something differently or how can we do something differently? Or how can we produce art differently, you know? And you know, for me, it's always been about that instead of like necessarily like sitting down and hunkering down to watch TV or something. And I just love it, man.
Right.
And I think that curiosity, like that natural curiosity, has led me to a lot of different places in my life.
Sure.
You know, it's like led me to music and it's led me to art and it's led me to like different design challenges and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I've never really like said that publicly or to anyone, but that's sort of like what I've always thought about like what we are on this planet, you know? And like, I didn't know if you guys like wanted to like maybe drill into that or like different parts of it, but that's sort of like who I am, you know?
Dude, that's fucking awesome. And I was actually kind of brings up a thing that I was going to ask you is you actually dove a little bit into podcasting and you called a woman, a Viking woman from Sweden or something.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. Sorry. You guys ask him questions on the Renaissance thing. Sorry. I did.
But I do want to talk about that, Carl, man.
We're flying through time. We're going from the Renaissance back to 900 Norse.
Yeah.
900. Scotty, warp factor 7.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really cool. Like that you just have like this creative spark that you're just like, I don't know where it's going to take me. I'm just going with it. And that's what the Art Shed is actually all about.
Yeah, it's wild, man, because like, so I worked on a, I don't know if you guys had seen some of the work, but like, I worked on a brand and the brand was called GI Germ Fighters, right? I was coming out of the game industry and I had just been laid off. And like, so GI Germ Fighters, like when I was a kid in elementary school, like me and my friends, we used to take like pencil erasers and we'd stick like staples into the arms.
Sure.
Like arms and legs, you know.
Oh, cool.
And these guys would have like a whole little world, you know. And then when I got older and I had spent some time in like the game industry as an animator and an artist, I started to bring this brand to life. And it ended up being like 18 different characters. And, you know, I worked up a lot of like, you know, potentially like accessories that would go with these characters, you know, like some storylines for potential, you know, if it was ever spun off into a series, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I literally spent like probably 5 or 6 years like developing this. And we made some pretty good progress. I had a small startup and we built a team and we were like building a website and we didn't get the bridge funding that we needed. So the brand kind of languished, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is that like what's, and this goes back to what you were saying, Carl, is like that spark of creativity is that, you know, I had just been laid off from the gaming industry for like the fourth or fifth time. And I was sitting there in front of my computer, in front of a blank screen. And it's like, I actually said to myself, I'm like, if I type nothing, it won't ever matter. Like no one cares.
Right.
And like, but if I do something, it might matter and I might be able to make a difference and I believe in what I'm doing, man. And that's like inspiration. That's what it is, you know? And it was a really poignant moment. Unfortunately, didn't go very far, but it's that moment of creativity, that spark that
right. I think
you're talking about that's cool, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the need to create or do something like,
yeah.
Like to feel kind of good about being alive.
Kinda. Yeah.
I know like that's how it is for me. It's like, you just have to be making stuff. Because you don't know what else to do with yourself, basically. Like, and I know, yeah. Like, for me and my brothers, like me and Carl and our brother Phil, like we're always obsessively working on something.
Yep.
And yeah, and you know, it's I obviously like looking like. So you worked in video games for a while. You pitch stuff around. you had a podcast called Stuffology 101. Yep. Yep. And that was like, you only made a few episodes, right?
Yep.
But you got like experts on, you talked to people about like, about the science of weed and Vikings and the, kind of local history of the Underground Railroad.
Yep.
You know, like, so you're looking into like lots of various crazy topics and stuff like that. And getting pretty good guests. And then also I felt like the podcast was kind of, I mean, you did the Vikings thing, but kind of about local history from where you're from too.
Yeah. Basically like Andy, like what I was thinking is that like, you know, in terms of like strategy is like engage locally and like, you know, just try to build community, you know, being like naturally curious. It's like, I want to know, like, and maybe you guys, I don't know, like, tell me what you guys think about this, but like, I want to know who played bagpipes on the AC/DC albums. And I want to know, like, how much did they practice? Like, what was like in the studio with those freaks?
Right.
Like, it's almost like if you guys have heard of that, that documentary, like 20 Feet from Stardom, it's almost like, I want to know like who some of these people were that did some work with like these people that are more prominent or more visible to us. Like, I just want to know like what their lives are like, you know?
Right.
And it was Kevin Conlon who played the bagpipes for AC.
Nice. Can you get him on this podcast? Cause I'm not here.
We'll work on it. I don't know if he'll be able to get him on the phone today.
Mike, you're braver than us because we only interview our friends or friends of friends. You actually called some.
Yeah. Like, you called experts up.
You called experts. Yeah. What was that like?
It was cool. Like, because I think that there's a lot of people out there that are like us and they're like me and like, they want to tell their story, man. And they want to share, you know, human beings. And I think that that's really cool, you know?
Yeah. And if you get them to talk about the thing that they're the most interested in, yeah, you're bound to get some passion in there too.
You know who I also wanted to talk to was I was looking for some people that play roller derby.
Oh, nice.
Because I wanted to, or like professional curlers. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That would be awesome.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. It's that natural curiosity of the stuff that like you never see on the news or like we never talk about. Like, it's just like, I wonder what the life is like for, you know, someone that, it, you know, is a, that curls professionally, you know?
I mean, do people actually make a living curling
in Canada?
That's what I'm wondering.
The Olympic curlers.
They must, but it probably doesn't. It's probably like being paid like a minor league baseball player or something like that. Who knows? But maybe if you're like Cool Hand Luke it and you make side bets, maybe you could be like a shark curler or something like that.
Yeah, or maybe it matters if you're left-handed or right-handed. I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Cool Hand Luke. Who's a?
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
No. What's the one where he plays pool? Where? Not Cool Hand
Luke. The Sting.
No.
Shark Tooth Johnny.
Whatever. If you what's a Jackie Gleason is the original, and then
the Hustler. Oh, right.
The Hustler, yeah.
The Hustler. He basically was in the tournaments, like would lose the tournament so he could go out and like make money like in the bars,
right?
Like, afterwards, you know, and he would play all these people. So maybe there's like a curler who's like an Olympic level curler who just pretends to be like a normal schlep, and I'm sure curlers aren't like athletic looking, and he just goes and makes side bets with all the people, but he's a freaking really good curler and just smokes everybody and then freaking takes all their money, acts like he's like an okay curler, you know?
And then they break his hands.
That's exactly what I'm saying, is that like the you know, you guys have seen that movie Kingpin, you know, and it's like so if you had a curler on the podcast and you talk to them, like there's probably curlers, they show up at these tournaments or whatever, and like one curler is looking at another curler and they're like, that guy's a tool. You know, like, I'm sure it happens, man.
And one of them is an Amish curler.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I was saying, what I wanted to, what I wanted to say to you, Mike, is when you said, I don't know if anything is successful or it's going anywhere, it doesn't have to. I mean, that's the point that we've learned, me, Chris, and Andy has learned. It doesn't really have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Who cares? This is fun. We do this just for the hell of it now.
Yeah.
Just to actually, this is the only time me, Andy, and Chris actually talk.
Yeah.
No, we text randomly.
Yeah, totally.
Right. We text and sometimes things. I see you at family functions, Carl.
Right, right. I see Andy.
Whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely true.
Yeah.
Chris, you got any questions for Mike?
Yeah. So I was going to say, you know, what do you like to watch? What do you get inspiration from? So, for instance, I mean, I really like the fact that it seems like a lot of the spirit of what you're talking about is kind of what the Art Shed is about. And it's kind of in popular culture is kind of referred to as like, you know, a maker now. So there are things like, I was just flipping around. I saw there's like a pottery competition show on. There's a competition show for making, was it Forged in Fire, making weapons and things like
right.
that, blacksmithing. And to a certain extent, you know, I get into those, but I don't fully get into the competition side of it. That's kind of silly. But are there any things that you watch or things that, you know, you've just seen recently that have caught your eye in terms of being inspiring about making things?
Well, I got to tell you guys that like with COVID and like being quarantined, I think my wife and I have watched all of Netflix.
Yeah.
That, well, I guess that may not be true, but we've watched quite a bit, you know. The thing is, man, is that like what the way that I see it is like the last 10 years, cable TV has been a tremendous invention, and it's not because of like news networks or the fact that we have 500 channels. They've introduced something, and perhaps you guys have read some articles on this or and whatnot. So I don't know if I'm off base here. This is just the way that I think about it. But like they've introduced a new format of storytelling, in my opinion, and it's long format storytelling is what I call it. And the thing is that if you look at like a show like Fargo, like I think Fargo's 4 seasons now.
Right.
It's a freaking masterpiece. I mean, it's cinematic genius. Like the cinematography in it is off the charts and it's art.
Right.
And the difference is, man, is that like if you're trying to release like a movie and you're trying to get like people, so movies are cookie cutter and you're trying to get people's asses in the seats and get them through the theaters, man. You know, with like long form storytelling, like if you have a captured audience and you have 12 hours to tell the story of someone, like it's almost like a 12-hour movie. And it's even like it can even be deeper than books, man, because you can spend like 4 hours, 6 hours even developing a character. And like it's so freaking engaging and so brilliant, man. And the thing is with Fargo, if you guys have ever seen that show, man, like they treat every episode as a movie. So, so there are no opening credits. There's no like, you know, fancy police theme with like, you know, the same title every time. It's told us a story with like a long established opening shots to set the mood. They're like going really deep on the characters. And like the original movie Fargo was brilliant to begin with by the Coen brothers. And then I'm not exactly sure who they handed off with to do the series. They didn't hand it off to just, you know, any schlubs. They're like, these guys know what the hell they're doing, man.
Right.
And like, when you look at like shows like that, man, it's pretty cool, man. So it's like that kind of stuff that like really gets me going. And in particular, Fargo, I think Fargo, the show is like a work of art and is like one of the better things I've ever seen, you know?
Did Mike, did you hear about the Japanese woman who, you know, in Fargo, they say they buried $1 million somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
They claim Fargo was almost true or something in the notes or something, but it really was just made
in
up,
the
right?
movie. They say this is based on a true story, but they actually real. It's not at all.
Not at
yeah,
all.
They yeah, made it up. So but, they just made it up, right? Thank you, Randy.
So and so they did that as a point to say like you could put this in front of anything, like
totally. So I guess there was a bunch of people who were like, since they said, oh, this is based on a true story. There's a part where they bury $1 million, right? And they can't find it or something like that. A lot of people thought that there was $1 million buried somewhere in North Dakota. So this Japanese woman landed from Tokyo, and she was like a beautiful Japanese woman like in a short skirt, not equipped for the winter, and she had a map, and she like went to the police station asking where this was, and they, I guess they told her or something, like in, or they couldn't tell her about the map, and she followed the map, and she died in the cold. Like,
really?
It's a real story. Yeah.
I feel like I heard a podcast that talked about that, and they talked about how, like, that was like the urban legend based on that story. But what actually happened is,
okay,
the woman, her boyfriend had just, or fiance had just broken up with her, and he was from Fargo. She was actually there to try to find him, but she couldn't really speak very good English, so she couldn't communicate. And she ended up dying looking for him. Or she came there to commit suicide or something.
Semper Cu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like a more interesting story, actually.
Yeah.
It actually sounds like it could have been in the show Fargo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
With the show Fargo, right, like, it's funny, man, because, like, they use the frameworks of, like, these other stories, and they fit this show into it. So
yeah.
In
yeah.
season four, they actually used The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, really?
And if you start to – as you start to watch it, you know, it's funny, man, because it's, like, it's Fargo, and it lives in the Fargo world, but it's extremely – strangely reminiscent of Wizard of Oz, and then like three episodes you're in, you're like, oh, that's actually Dorothy, and this is the Scarecrow, and like then there's a tornado. Like, it's really crazy.
So if you listen to it with the sound turned off and you play Dark Side of the Moon, yeah, does that line up?
I would highly recommend that, man.
Probably does.
That could be another episode of the podcast too,
right?
But you have to play in Pink Floyd's entire discography.
Yeah,
you have to start it at the second bell, though.
Yeah,
absolutely, man. Not the third bell. But you know, besides that, like, so that, like, the long form storytelling, like, really inspires me, and I think it's marvelously done. Aside from that, it's a little more pedestrian. Like, I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this, but we're watching Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares for the second time.
Oh, wow. That's fucked up, dude.
You're like, I want more abuse.
Well, but the thing is that I wanted to share that with you guys because I know the shed is a judgment-free zone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's enough cooking shows that you could probably watch a different cooking show every day of the week.
Totally.
And you're watching Kitchen Nightmares. Why? Because you like that he's a hard ass or something?
No, so Kitchen Nightmares, like, I don't know. So he starts out as a hard ass, and then, like, later in the show, he is trying to help them, you know?
yeah.
It's not formulaic.
Not formulaic at all. It's like the A-Team, you know? At the 36-minute yeah, right. mark, he turns into someone who's good, who's going to help them. And then they change the music bed. It all works out. Right.
Well, have you watched?
Break him down, though.
Have you watched the British one at all?
No, I haven't, man.
The British one is great. I like that one a lot better.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do. I watch them. I'm not, you know, like, oh, it's an awful show, but it's very different in the sense that in the British one, he does some really great stuff where he blindfolds all of the kitchen staff and he tells them to say which steak is cooked to perfection while they're blindfolded. But he gives them chicken and pork and lamb and all this stuff. And this guy who's like, I'm the best chef ever, is tasting it. And he's kind of like, oh, yeah, no, that's undercooked, you know, and it's like chicken. but then the same thing, he also gives this restaurant owner a really hard time because the oven isn't working. And the guy's driving a really nice car. And he's like, look, you want to own a restaurant? Screw you. Sell your car and get a good oven. Otherwise, you have no right being in this business. And then it's become almost I really love that about the British one. And then the US one, it seems like every kitchen gets a brand new free kitchen out of doing the show. So it's kind of, it's funny that they kind of reverse that in the US.
Is Gordon Ramsay on both of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the same. They're both Kitchen Nightmares. Yeah. It started in the UK. Yeah.
So he relates.
There's no way that Gordon Ramsay's going to have a show and he's not going to be on it.
Right. Exactly.
So he relates to English, British people different than Americans?
Well, the British one, he does help people out a lot more. But he's very blunt. I don't think it's something that he's out to be a hard ass. In the British one, he comes across much more. He does swear and he yells at people, but he'll like totally tear down like a chef who thinks he's the greatest chef in the world. And then there'll be some young guy working in the kitchen. And he's kind of like, this guy's doing a good job cooking. He's like, you know, and he'll tell the restaurant owner, fire that idiot, hire this kid, bring in a couple more staff members. And he's like, you got it going on then. He's like, but you're not going to get anywhere with this idiot running the kitchen.
Which one existed first?
The British one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah. And they're both good. They're both good. But you can tell that, you know, they give away free kitchens because they want an opportunity to bring sponsors on board, I think.
Right.
Because they always tell you what brand and what make.
Right. And then more people are going to put up with your shit if they know they're going to get a free kitchen at the end of the
Yeah, it's true.
That's exactly it, man. I don't know if you guys have seen this show Bar Rescue with John Tapper coming in, man. He's brutal, man. And like,
yeah,
they're like, okay, all right, whatever you say, man. Just give us like free shit.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. We need a point of sale system. So let's go on. Bar Rescue.
I'll take my whipping, but give me a fucking free whatever bar.
Yeah. So if you look at like Bar Rescue and Kitchen Nightmares on one end of the extreme and Fargo on the other, I guess superhero movies are in the middle.
Well, I totally get the attraction of things like Bar Rescue and Kitchen Nightmares because it's really kind of fun to see someone look at something and be like, okay, this is broken. Let's fix it.
Yeah,
totally.
Well, I thought you were going farther with that.
Oh, no. I mean, that's the satisfaction in and of itself. And yeah,
isn't it more like a military thing? Like there's always like in that the movie, there's the recruits that come like, and they're all from different parts of the country, and they're all like,
are you talking about Police Academy 2-7?
Yeah, pretty much. But it's kind of
dog, is it?
And there's one guy who makes funny voices,
right? Yeah. One guy's really big and he has a gun.
So listen, I told you guys that like we've watched all of Netflix.
Yeah.
So I do watch Dinner Impossible.
What is that?
Have you heard of this? It's with so Robert Irvine, that dude that does like Restaurant Rescue or whatever. But so Robert Irvine is he goes on these impossible missions to cook dinner. So they send him. Exactly. They send him to an island, like off of the coast of LA. I can't remember the island right now. And they're like, "Listen, we need you to cook. We need you to cook a fish dinner for 150 people." And he's like, "Okay, where's the stove?" And they're like, "The stove is a charcoal pit out on the beach." And then they're like, "The fish that you need to cook is on that boat out there. So you got to figure out a way to get on that boat because they can't come in here with the boat." It's like. It's absolutely the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
This is like a no-brainer for Chris.
Oh, this yeah. You'd
have this covered.
This is my daily dinner. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There's a sheep up on that mountain. Get it?
Yeah.
And there's a stack of wood. Make dinner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, you could be on one of those shows.
Yeah, I actually was auditioning. Well, I did like screen tests and everything for one this summer. That I really am not a big fan of the cooking competition shows, but this one had some ties to Julia Child. And I don't know, I think it fell apart because of COVID or something like that, but everyone fell off the map. Yeah, I don't like the competition aspect of things. I love problem solving, but I don't really get into competition.
And it has to be done in a time limit. Why does it have to be done in a time limit?
Well, yeah, that kills me because, I mean, to me, the secret of cooking is thinking like, before you go to bed the night before, you know, do a little bit of prep work. And then your dinner is going to be so much better and so much easier to cook the next day if you just spend 15 minutes the night before.
And that mimics real life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's what restaurants do. I mean, a lot of good restaurants, I mean, really good restaurants, they have people in there and they come in first thing in the morning. They're just making the sauces for that night and everything. And it's all there for the chefs when they come in later.
Wow. My beers, I'm keeping them outside because it's cold. Yeah. So I'm going to go get some more beers actually outside. So classic. You guys talk amongst yourself.
So I do have one more diatribe before I go get a cocktail.
And that,
Well, let's wrap up. Let's do this and we can wrap up. Yeah.
We'll wrap this up and
then we'll get more drinks afterwards.
Oh, so sorry.
I wanted to build on the whole Gordon Ramsay thing and what's weird. And I'm definitely interested to see what you guys think on this. Is there seems to be some fascination in the States with British people, and if you look at America's Got Talent or American Idol, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Most of the judges are British, and they have British accents. And then also, what was funny is that I was watching that HBO. Short series Chernobyl the thing with the British accent to us is that it sounds regal and more sophisticated than us, but it also sounds somewhat foreign. So they had Russian people in the Chernobyl movie that had British accents, and we just watch it as Americans, we're like, oh, that guy seems foreign. And then any Roman movie that you've ever seen,
they're all British.
Has the regality of the English and British accent, it's never really Italian people that are in the Senate or in the movie Gladiator or that kind of stuff. And I just think it's interesting, our fascination with the British accent and British people,
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, do you think it's just because they're still speaking English and so we can still understand what they're saying?
I think that's probably it. Yeah.
Yeah. They sound like smarty pantses too.
English might be actually better actors. Like some of them, but they don't have to pay them as much, but they're really good. they're really good, well-trained actors, but they don't have to they don't have to pay. They're like Shakespearean,
Yeah. They're classically trained. They're
classically trained. Right. So this is slightly getting off the subject, but when I was in Germany, I was walking, you'd walk the streets of Germany and there'd be these classical musicians and any one of them could be in a symphony playing. How we have street musicians that they play the guitar and some of them are good. I'm not going to say some of them aren't good, but some of them are horrible. But when I was in Germany, there'd be a woman playing a violin. It'd probably be the best violin solo I've ever heard, and she was a street musician,
right?
And so I just think in Europe maybe they're more classically trained. I don't know. Well, that's my theory.
There's also a lot more support. So I mean, for starters, whether you're in the UK or in Germany, you have health insurance no matter what your employment status is. Yeah. And then in both countries, in terms of acting and in terms of classical music, certainly there's a lot of support so that you can make enough money. You're not going to get rich. You're not going to live in the best house ever. You're probably not even going to own a car, but doesn't matter because there's public transportation. And also, you'll make enough money being in a small orchestra or being in stage productions. So if that's what you love to do, you've got your health insurance. You aren't going to starve. You're never going to be able to choose where you want to live. You're not going to have the best clothes or a car or anything like that, but you can get by and you can follow your passion and do that. And in the US you can't do that. I think, you end up on the street.
Right.
That's a really salient point, Andy, is that you kind of have that safety net if you're trying to do something creative,
Yeah.
Chris,
yeah.
This is why we have Chris on the show. He comes up with these fucking gems. it's totally true, man, what you just said. Like totally. You don't even need to own a car in Europe. You can just take the fucking train anywhere, So you can put more time, so you could put more time into art, music, or acting and not worry about because somebody in America has to fucking become a waiter or waitress half their time.
Yeah.
And then
go into biotech.
And then they're burned out when they come home and they fall asleep when they should be doing their passion,
I also think that the Europeans just value it differently. For us, it's more of an afterthought,
It's very true.
I don't think so. I think if we had the support system, like Chris is saying,
the support system, yeah.
I know enough people who are great artists and musicians in America who would probably be even better if they had like all day to muck around with it.
Right.
Right.
I think that's basically what Chris was saying.
Yeah, I think so. And it's just, and I think, you know, I mean, what Mike is saying is true too, that people appreciate it more because it's presented to them more.
It's presented as like a good thing.
Yeah.
And you're not like a, yeah, here you're like, oh, that fucking musician, he's like
spongy. He's a deadbeat.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
And we like this.
I'm watching The Bachelor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the people I gravitate towards, deadbeats and musicians.
Yeah. Beatniks and ne'er-do-wells.
Ne'er-do-wells, yeah, exactly.
Bring a cocktail. I'll be back in like 2 minutes.
All right, so yeah, we're going to just finish up, Mike.
Did Mike go away?
Mike, did you leave?
No, I'm coming.
I'm ending this, but this is where we end. So just tell us if you like.
Do you have
like,
any links or anything you want to tell our audience anything? About?
This is how we end.
All right,
you don't have to.
All right, guys, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys. The links to my Bandcamp are Mike Malone Music on Bandcamp. You can look it up and you can find me there. And I look forward to hearing from you. Peace out.
Nice, Chris.
All right.
That was great, Mike.
I'm a
get a cocktail.
The man has won a cocktail. Cool. And I'm Live Fire Cook at livefirecook.com, Live Fire Cook on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. And if it's Live Fire Cook, it's probably me.
Andy?
I'm at andyrestano.com, and you find links to all my stuff. That's going on with me, including my YouTube channel, Twitter, Instagram, and stuff. And then I've also been doing another podcast with our brother Phil. It's his podcast, and I've just been helping out in the first few episodes. It's called The Post Relevant Podcast. Look it up. You can check it out.
I'm Mad Carl. You can find me at madcarl.com, madspiral.com. Carl Restaino on Facebook and Instagram. That's what I update most. And as they say in the bar, that when they kick you out, they say, you don't have to stay here, but you can't go home. So get the hell out of the art shed. Oh, wait. Oh, crap.
Oh, no.
I played the wrong outro. And I deleted the massive stomp.
You can just add it in, Carl. I'll do the thank yous. And
oh no! I got it right now. I'm loading it back up again. I'll cut this part out. So, Mike, I'll send you a new link, and you can go get a drink. Yeah, that's funny. All right, it's loading. Okay, and get the hell out of the arches.
Thanks to Mike Malone for being on the show. Thanks to Carl and Chris for helping host the show. Thanks to all our listeners and viewers and visitors around the world. Thanks to Ed Guild and Anderson Spago for the Mad Carl Stomp. I'm Andrew Restaino on behalf of Welcome to the Art Shed. We thank you.
Nice. Hey, that was a good one, guys.
Oh, yeah.
So after this, I'll send a link and whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go get another beer.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going for a smoke break.